Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Crossover series continues. It's NFC West versus NFC East this week. Up today, Patricia Traina. She's the host of Locked On Giants. We'll check in with the Week 3 opponent in the New York Giants and maybe some matchups and what these two teams look like coming into 2020. I've had a fun time the last couple of weeks getting to know some of the opponents on the 49ers schedule. This episode of Locked On 49ers is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar fueled my bike ride yesterday. I'm having fun exploring and trying to get some exercise in while being distant. So the bike is good for that, actually, I've found. And the great thing about Built Bar, high in protein, low in sugar, and you can go to BuiltBar.com. Enter promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first box of Built Bars. So let's welcome to the show Patricia Traina, beat writer for The Athletic, as well as host of Locked On Giants. Week 3, it's going to be a back-to-back New York trip for the 49ers who go to the Jets week 2, and are, I assume they're going to hang out on the East Coast. They requested the back-to-back East Coast games, so they're going to hang out in New York for a full week and then play the Jets and then the Giants in week 3, so it should be a fun trip early in the season.
Yes, indeed. And Brian, let's start off with a big picture type of setting for the 49ers. You know, the 49ers turned it around last year. They went from being one of the worst teams to a Super Bowl contender, came up short of their goal. And I got to believe that when that happens, you come up short of your goal, that some of the air gets taken out of the tires of the team. What's been your impression of the mood of the team? Are they still suffering a hangover? Have they gotten over it? Where do they stand on the whole mentally?
Yeah, it's tough seeing, you know, how often the team that loses the Super Bowl suffers a hangover the year after. And I wonder if this whole COVID-19 truncated offseason will affect that, if it actually helps the 49ers, because there's so many other things to dwell on, and it's not a situation where you're just dwelling on this loss for months and months and months, and that you'll be so excited to get back and playing again that it sort of erases those bad feelings of being disappointed by losing a Super Bowl. And right away after the Super Bowl, the overwhelming sentiment out of the 49ers from almost every player and coach was, let's run it back. We were the best team. Let's go do it again. We're going to win it next time. Let's bring everybody back. And then you started to see, well, shoot, okay, salary cap is going to not probably allow us to do that. They traded away DeForest Buckner, who's a team captain. Joe Staley, after having time to think about it, was like, you know what? This just isn't right. I want the best quality of life with my daughters later. So Joe Staley decided to announce his retirement. So the 49ers were able to pull off a draft trade and get Trent Williams in there. So it's not quite going to be running it back. It's going to be a little bit different roster. And they tried to replace the players that they lost as well as they could in Trent Williams at left tackle, with Kinlaw at defensive tackle, replacing DeForest Buckner in round one, coming back and replacing Emmanuel Sanders in round one with Brandon Ayuk at wide receiver. So it's not quite running it back, but I think the hangover part of it, they might actually be helped by it, because they're going to be so excited, I would imagine, to actually get back on the field and have an opportunity to get training camp rolling if this thing does get going as the league expects this summer.
In terms of, you look at what the 49ers did over the offseason between free agency and the draft, where do you think they took the biggest step forward in terms of improving an area that maybe wasn't as strong last year?
I don't know if, I think long term they have an opportunity to be really good at some of those positions that I mentioned. I mean, it's really hard to replace an all-pro with an all-pro like they did by adding Trent Williams. And you would think, at least in the short term, they probably even got better at left tackle, which is surprising to say when someone as good and as who's been as important to the 49ers as Joe Staley retires. But Trent Williams is that type of player. I think where they really lost is just in leadership. A couple of team captains there in Joe Staley and DeForest Buckner. And Nick Bosa earlier this week or last week talking to reporters about what it meant to lose that guy playing next to him in DeForest Buckner and having that veteran presence. And he was the guy that was making calls about what kind of stunts and pass rush games they would be running on third downs, and just a really important piece to that defense. So some other players are going to have to step up and take over that leadership role. I think Nick Bosa will probably be one of those on defense. I think a really underrated player in the league is linebacker Fred Warner. who's got the green dot on his helmet and he calls in the plays from the sideline. I think he will take more of a leadership role. Obviously, you still have Richard Sherman there on defense, who's big with being a leader in that locker room. So they should be okay, but it's really hard to say that this team is better than the Super Bowl team, even though they were able to add high caliber players in places where they did lose big time talent.
Okay, I want to ask you a couple things about the offensive side of the ball, and I've got to start with Jimmy G at quarterback. There was some talk amongst some of the national pundits, if you will, that there was maybe some doubt as to whether or not Jimmy G is capable of leading this team to the top of the mountain, which of course would be the Super Bowl championship, that, you know, his inexperience and some flaws that I guess had plagued his game in the past showed up in the Super Bowl game against the Chiefs. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, he was so good for most of that Super Bowl, and he did miss a throw, and you know, there was the deep ball to Emmanuel Sanders that could have potentially won the game for the 49ers. There were other plays that Kyle Shanahan had dialed up. Garoppolo made the right read. The player was open, and sometimes things happen, and Chris Jones got his big old mitts up there and knocked the ball down. So overall, Jimmy Garoppolo had a really good Super Bowl and had a fantastic season for the 49ers. And so he's unfairly going to get dinged, and that's what happens. The quarterback is going to take most of the blame and usually gets too much credit for wins and too much credit for losses too. And that's just the way it is in the NFL at times. But overall, I think in-house, and we saw it with what the 49ers decided in the Tom Brady situation. Tom Brady's number one choice was to go back home, play for the team he rooted for growing up, and play for the 49ers. And the 49ers said, you know what, Tom, you are maybe the greatest quarterback of all time, but we like our situation right now with Jimmy Garoppolo better. And I think the 49ers expect Garoppolo to even take another step next year in his second, cross your fingers, second full season starting under Kyle Shanahan, because that was the first time in Jimmy Garoppolo's career last year that he started 16 games for a team, and he took his team to the Super Bowl. And when you compare what the 49ers offense looked like when Jimmy Garoppolo has not been in the lineup for the last 3 years versus when he is, it's night and day. They're a team that could not win a football game in 2017. He shows up after the trade. They rattle off five straight wins, and it was mind-blowing to watch how much better everybody, even the other side of the ball, was playing when Jimmy Garoppolo was the only thing different and plugged in there. And I'm not a big QB wins guy, but it's pretty obvious how much better the 49ers are with Jimmy Garoppolo in there at quarterback. And we saw it in Atlanta with Matt Ryan in his second full year starting under Kyle Shanahan. There's just so much going on in Shanahan's offense. And I think Jimmy Garoppolo, the 49ers expect him to take even another step forward, which means he's going to be one of the upper echelon quarterbacks in the NFL if that's the case. Now, if he either plateaus or takes a step back in 2020, maybe next offseason the 49ers have to have another difficult conversation to decide whether or not they want to continue to pay Jimmy Garoppolo his big contract. And they do have some outs in his contract, but I would guess that that won't be the case this time next year.
Now, what about at tight end? Because I know there was a rumor before the draft that the 49ers were looking to add another tight end. Evan Engram of the Giants, his name came up. I personally didn't buy that, but apparently there was a rumor that the 49ers were looking to maybe add a complimentary piece for George Kittle. I don't know if you feel that they have that yet or not, but what can you tell us about that aspect of the offense?
Yeah, I don't think a second tight end is used enough from what we've seen in Kyle Shanahan's offense to warrant paying big money or trading for a big dollar option, I guess, you know, spending big resources on a second tight end like Evan Engram. I never really bought that trade rumor stuff. They did, apparently, according to reports, at least talk to the agent of Austin Hooper, who played with Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. I don't know if they were just trying to get an idea of what the market is for tight ends before they have to pay George Kittle a mega contract. Were they thinking about, hey, look, if we can pay this other tight end who we know plays well and Kyle Shanahan knows in this offense, maybe they had some internal discussions about trading George Kittle instead of trading DeForest Buckner. And that was a way that they were going to save some salary cap room. I find it hard to believe. Teams have to do their diligence behind the scenes and explore every avenue, but when it came down to it, they spent a sixth round pick on a block first tight end in Charlie Warner out of Georgia, and I think that's probably what should have been expected all along after losing Levine Toilolo, who was essentially a sixth offensive lineman in the 49ers offense. He went to New York, and then Garrett Celek, who was a really good blocker as well, retiring. I think they just needed another tight end, depth in that tight end room, and someone who was a really good blocker to give George Kittle some time to go run routes and not have to be a blocker, because there are times in the Super Bowl where he's being used as a blocker, and with his ability as a receiver, you want to be able to put him out in pass patterns on third down. So I think most of the tight end stuff was pretty overblown, even though I'm sure they did have some difficult internal discussions as they decided how they were going to build this team post-Super Bowl.
Now, I want to talk real quick about the defense. Javon Kinlaw, a guy who, by the way, I was very high on. I was kind of hoping the Giants might have a shot at him, but I knew realistically they wouldn't. But overall, it looks as though the starting defense is returning intact. How important is that, especially considering they were able to keep defensive coordinator Robert Saleh?
Yeah, being able to keep Robert Saleh, I think, is one of the huge coups of the offseason, and I don't know if they'll be able to do that again next year, but they get to keep almost everybody. They had to make the tough decision on DeForest Buckner, which really allowed them to keep everybody. So they were able to pay Arik Armstead, who sort of spends half his time at defensive end, half his time rushing from the interior at defensive tackle. So Armstead will do some work that DeForest Buckner did. I think we'll probably see him a little bit more inside in 2020. And of course, they spent that first round draft pick on Javon Kinlaw. And I have no doubt Dave Gettleman probably had a very high grade on Javon Kinlaw. But man, with all that beef the Giants already have inside with Dexter Lawrence and Dalvin Tomlinson, and they brought in Leonard Williams. So a lot of size inside there probably wasn't in the cards for the Giants, no matter how far Javon Kinlaw fell. But I bet Gettleman really liked him because he loves his size. But yeah, they're betting on the upside, and they get 4 years of a rookie contract for Javon Kinlaw and really replaced DeForest Buckner one for one with the highest caliber athlete they could find. And they used the 14th overall pick on him, and he's a monster inside, and they're hoping that their defense doesn't skip a beat. And by trading DeForest Buckner, obviously got the pick that they were able to use to draft Javon Kinlaw, but also allowed them to pay Jimmy Ward at free safety and Arik Armstead, and probably have some wiggle room to do some other things in the future with some other players, including George Kittle.
If you look at this 49ers team, but all sides of the ball, where is their most glaring weakness, the area that concerns you the most as they start to, you know, get ready eventually for training camp and try to, you know, get themselves ready for the season?
Short term, I would say it's still wide receiver, even though they spent a first round pick on a wide receiver. And it's not because Brandon Ayuk isn't a really athletic wide receiver and not a good prospect. And they have a number of players on the roster that have had whatever issues and have yet to prove that they're worthy of being a starting caliber wide receiver. I would probably bet that the wide receiver in week one will be Kendrick Bourne, who was an undrafted free agent a couple years ago and has rose up the depth chart and just been one of the more dependable pass catchers for the 49ers. But I just think losing Emmanuel Sanders in the short term, a veteran wide receiver who made an immediate impact when he showed up with the 49ers, and look, they felt the need halfway through the season last year to trade for that veteran piece, and now they don't have that again because Emmanuel Sanders was one and done with the 49ers and left via free agency to the New Orleans Saints. So I just don't know how quickly Brandon Ayuk will be ready to be a starting caliber player. Maybe at the second half of year one, we'll forget all about Emmanuel Sanders. Maybe it's more like year two or three, and then the 49ers might be even better for it down the road. But just right away, not having that veteran presence, and the next veteran player on the roster at wide receiver in the NFL was Marquise Goodwin, and he was traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. So they've got a really young roster, a lot of players who were banged up, who missed all of last year. So a lot of things have to go right at wide receiver, and a lot of young players have to really develop for them to be ready to go and ready for prime time early in the season when they face a team like the New York Giants in week three. So that's probably in the short term the biggest hole on the roster that's still, it's not really even a hole because there's so many really talented players competing. It's just who's going to show up and who's going to prove that they're able to be the 1B to Deebo Samuel's 1A in the offense. And then looking forward, I think it's cornerback and in the secondary, because they did re-sign Jimmy Ward, but they've got four other free agents after this year at corner. Richard Sherman being a big one, starting strong safety Jaquaski Tartt, and starting nickel corner Kaywan Williams, as well as a third-round pick from a couple years ago in Akello Witherspoon, who lost the starting job to Emmanuel Mosley last year. Emmanuel Mosley, too, is going to be a restricted free agent. So a bunch of free agents in the defensive secondary, and that might be a really new-look unit in 2021. But as far as this year, they're bringing all their starters back in the secondary, so they should be fine.
Good stuff, Brian. Thank you so much for filling us in on the San Francisco 49ers. Folks, we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to flip the tables a little bit, and Brian's going to ask me about the New York Giants, so do stay with us.
This episode is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Built Bars are tasty, and Built Bars are healthy. If you're looking for that energy, you need a snack. This is ideal, the ideal snack for me, because you don't want anything heavy. You don't want anything that is going to stick in your teeth when you're trying to do a podcast or a meeting. You got the video conference, right? You don't want to be the guy with stuff all over his teeth. The key here is the health part, to go along with the tastiness with low sugar, which is key for me, because some of these bars are like 400 calories. They're sugar bombs. And it's crazy. It's supposed to be this thing you're doing healthy for yourself to have this bar instead of a meal, and you might as well be having dessert. But Built Bars, filled with protein, they taste as good as a candy bar. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft and chewy. They're very easy to eat, smooth, love the texture. My favorite so far has been the peanut butter, although I've got a mix in my box that I haven't finished yet. Mint chocolate is a really good flavor, but the peanut butter is my favorite. Here's what's crazy. 20 grams of protein, only 3 grams of sugar. You would never taste this and think it was only 3 grams of sugar. So that's the biggest thing to me that makes me love these Built Bars, is they taste fantastic, but they're not sugar bombs. So low calorie, low sugar, low carb, but high in protein, high in fiber, exactly what you need in a snack. And the best part is, if you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON, that's one word, LOCKEDON, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, we are back here on the NFC East, NFC West crossover episode. Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers with Patricia Traina, the host of Locked On Giants. And last year, the 49ers were drafting very high in the NFL draft in 2019, went from picking second overall to playing in the Super Bowl. I want to know from you, first off, and I want to get a little bit deeper into this draft class and some specific players on that New York Giants depth chart. Is there anything that Giants fans could hang their hat on and say, look, the 49ers just made this huge jump in 2019. Why can't the New York Giants do that in 2020? Is there anything you could point to that the Giants could say, look, this is why we're going to be that Cinderella team this year?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? I'll tell you. I think you look at the Giants and they finally addressed that offensive line. They just needed to do that. That would be the first thing that I think Giant fans should be excited about. They finally have hopefully their future at left and right tackle. Now, whether or not both Andrew Thomas and Matthew Part start at the same time, that remains to be seen. But they have added talent as opposed to going for the quick fix with overspending on guys. But I think the real positive, and it's funny because I was just putting together something in which I was ranking the strength of the Giants team, that defensive front really has me excited. Now, you look at the Giants defense and you say, okay, you know what? They don't really have a stud pass rusher. They don't, the back end of the defense is a little shaky. Why should I be excited? Why should I hope that this year Patrick Graham's going to be able to do what James Betcher didn't do the last couple of years, which is basically put a good defense on the field? And I say to people, look at that defensive front with Leonard Williams, with Dalvin Tomlinson, with Dexter Lawrence. They added Austin Johnson from Tennessee. That's going to be the key. And it's the Giants aren't going to, I don't think they're going to go from being literally worst to like first in the conference. I don't know that they're going to be a Super Bowl contender. I do think, in all honesty, they're going to be much, much better. And I've seen in studying the internet, I've seen a lot of places say, oh, the Giants will win about six games. I think 6.5 is the average that I came across. I think the Giants can maybe surprise a few people. And I don't rule out 8-8. You know, the Giants, unlike the 49ers, they had a lot more holes. They had a lot more that they had to do. And general manager Dave Gettleman has finally started to fill in some of the holes, because if you look at the history of the Giants, unfortunately, in the previous regime, the drafts were just so bad that the Giants basically had nothing. The cupboard was bare, unlike the 49ers, who, you know, at least started to get some quality draft picks in there and make some deals and do some smart free agent signings. So the Giants, basically, if you think about it, were kind of like an expansion team, having to start from scratch. But I do think that, you know, Dave Gettleman, the general manager, has planted some solid seeds, and I think we're going to start to see some pretty flowers grow out of that garden as opposed to the weeds we've been seeing the last several years.
I like that. I like that visual there. With things blooming outside, both in California and New York right now, that's a great visual. You mentioned the offensive lineman they added, and it's really easy to see the direction David Gettleman's going here, and I think it's smart. You want to protect your young quarterback, and if you want to talk about a team that's going to make big leaps in 2020, it starts with the quarterback, right? So they bring in Andrew Thomas with the fourth overall pick in the draft to really add to what looks like the makings of a really good offensive line. I love the project in Matt Peart. He has all the length and athleticism you could want, and we'll see how he develops out of UConn as a future potential left tackle, a starting left tackle. To get a guy like that in the third round of the draft is, you know, there's not always that type of player there for a team. Late in round three. So I like that pick as well. One thing looking at the draft, though, for, and obviously Saquon Barkley is going to get helped out quite a bit, right, with that offensive line. So you help Barkley, you help your young quarterback. But how about the pass catchers in New York? They didn't draft any receivers. Is there enough playmakers in that offense to put up points in a league now where we're seeing scoring averages go up and up and teams slinging the ball more than ever?
Well, one of the things that head coach Joe Judge has said repeatedly is it's not going to be about one guy. Whereas if you look back at the Giants from a couple of years ago, everybody and their uncle knew that Odell Beckham was going to be the guy. The Giants have tried to move away from that. They've tried to get to a point where now they are spreading the ball around based on, you know, the game plan, the opponent that they're facing, and so forth. The problem that I see, though, is while on paper, it looks like the Giants have a solid group of receivers, and I include tight ends, what bothers me a little bit is the durability. And I'll start with tight ends. Evan Engram is an amazing talent, but he has been unable to make it through a 16-game season. And it just seems the last couple of years, the number of games he's been able to get on the field has reduced, has shrunk. And look, if he's not getting on the field, he could be the most, you know, he could be the second coming of, you know, George Kittle for all we care. It's not going to do them any good if he's sitting in the trainer's room. Similarly, at receiver, the Giants have Golden Tate, who was pretty sturdy and solid for them. They have Sterling Shepard, and they have Darius Slayton, who's entering his second season. On paper, a very good trio. But I look at Sterling Shepard and how last year, the two concussions within 4 weeks of each other. And I sit here and I say, my God, what happens if this young man suffers another head injury? What are they going to do then? Who's going to step in and kind of fill in that spot? They don't really have somebody. So again, on paper, I think the Giants are going to have more than enough with receiving options. And also we've got to throw Saquon Barkley in there, because I do think new offensive coordinator Jason Garrett is going to get this guy into space, unlike, you know, the previous regime, which, you know, for whatever reason would not get him into space. And I think you're going to see more of a vertical offense as opposed to these short crossing patterns and West Coast-like tendencies, which really were never much of a fit, I thought, for this particular football team, certainly not in the conditions that the Giants play in the Northeast, you know, especially when it gets cold and whatnot. You want to be able to pound the ball. You want to be able to, you know, to chuck it deep. And they really kind of got away from Giants football that, as we knew it back in the 80s and 90s and even, you know, the first part of the 2000s. So I think the Giants, you know, on paper are going to be okay, but I worry about the sturdiness and the health of some of their key players.
I would recommend drafting Saquon Barkley onto your fantasy football team, to put it that way, because yeah, getting the ball out in space and probably seeing those receiving numbers go up. I would not be surprised at all if he leads the Giants in both rushing and receiving in 2020. I want to flip to the other side of the ball really quick here, because I think the number one thing when I'm looking at this Giants roster, why that defense wouldn't be able to step up in a way that the 49ers did and really be a team that goes from worst to first, is the pass rush. And you mentioned the size, and they've got some size inside, and they should be okay stopping the run. They've spent some money on a Blake Martinez and brought in some linebackers, but I'm trying to look at the pass rushers, and I'm having trouble even finding someone who could even sniff double-digit sacks. Maybe O'Shane Zimenez could break out in year two, but where will the pass rush come from on that New York Giants defense?
The million-dollar question. That's the question that Giant fans also want to know. Here's what we believe will happen. Now, I say this, and I need to preface it by saying that we have not yet had an opportunity to speak with Patrick Graham, the new defensive coordinator. So we don't know exactly what he plans to run. We can look at what he ran in Miami, and we can put together some clues and you know, I guess make some educated guesses. But what the Giants are going to do, and you're right, they don't have, you know, what Dave Gettleman has called a blue goose pass rusher, you know, like a Justin Tuck or a Michael Strahan or an O.C. Umeniora. They didn't even re-sign Marcus Golden, who was their only pass rusher last year, to have double-digit sacks. And although they did give him the UFA tender, which simply means that if he doesn't sign elsewhere before, I think it's July 15th or July 22nd, or whenever the start of the first training camp comes, whichever's later, then his rights revert back to the Giants. But what the Giants are going to do is twofold, I think. Number one, the strength of that defense is the defensive front. And if those guys can get up there and occupy multiple blockers and just create gaps for the guys in the back end to shoot through, I think you could see some of these outside linebackers, the O'Shane Zimenezes, the Kyler Fackrell, who they brought over from the Packers. I think you can see some of those guys really, you know, start to, you know, produce on a consistent basis. Now, I don't think you're going to have necessarily a guy who's going to be double digits, but I don't think they're looking for that. I think realistically, what they are hoping for is consistency. And whether, you know, O'Shane Zimenez gets all the sacks one week and then the next week it's Kyler Fackrell or Lorenzo Carter, it doesn't matter where they come from as long as they're getting them. And also, you know, people look at sacks and they get too hung up on sacks. You also got to throw in pressures and hits and hurries. They all are part of the equation. Anything that's going to force an incompletion or perhaps a turnover. Now, to that end, what the Giants did is they tried to improve the back end of their defense. They're counting on DeAndre Baker, who they traded up last year in the first round to have a better season. They brought in James Bradbury, who's going to replace, or who is projected to replace, I should say, Sam Beal, who, you know, unfortunately, lack of experience combined with injuries has just kind of made him, you know, more of a little bit more of a project than I think they would have hoped he'd be at this point. So I think the hope is if they can get these receivers covered, you know, have the defensive backfield cover a little longer and get the defensive front to push, then the edge rushers can generate the pass rush. That is our take on that. All too often we saw in the past where the defensive pass rush, the front seven, they came close, but it was no cigar. And that was because back end couldn't hold their coverage. So I think that was the approach that Gettleman and company took in trying to generate a pass rush for this Giants team.
It's one of the most interesting matchups, I think, looking ahead to week three. First of all, when the 49ers defense is on the field, Fred Warner, one of the most underrated players in the NFL, chasing around Saquon Barkley is going to be a fun one. That's probably the number one matchup I'll be looking for in week three. But on the other side of the ball, it's that secondary, that young secondary with the young wide receiver core, the 49ers. I think that's going to be a fun matchup. And they did spend some money on James Bradbury there. DeAndre Baker, they expect, I'm sure, to develop more in year two. There's another. And they obviously spent a second round pick this year on Xavier McKinney, who I think is going to be someone who's in that defensive backfield for a very long time. Just sort of a rock solid player, even though he doesn't wow you physically and may not be in the upper echelon of safeties around the league as far as physical freaks go, and guys like Derwin James, Jamal Adams, and Minkah Fitzpatrick, and players like that. But I think he's going to be a rock solid member in the middle of that defense for a long time. But I want to hear a little bit more about another second year corner, Corey Ballantyne, who was a player that I liked a lot coming out of a small school last year, dealt with some tragedy before the season. Has he developed in a way that he might even be able to sneak in there and get a starting job?
I don't know that he's necessarily going to be in the mix for a starting job. But with that said, I think if we go back to last year, one of the problems I had with Corey Ballantyne is that he was used in the slot and it wasn't a good fit for what he did. It was a position I don't think he even played that a whole lot of in college, if I'm not mistaken. And he struggled, you know, but the good thing about the kid is that he has a short memory. He didn't get down. I think he's got the skill set to be very effective on the outside, could potentially be like the third man off the bench if they need somebody to fill in for an injury, or if they want to, you know, maybe move, I don't know, Bradbury into the slot, or, you know, Baker into the slot, or, you know, just kind of get fancy with how they deploy their defensive backs. But Ballantyne's an interesting kid. He was also their kickoff returner, did a good job for them in that regard. But yeah, I think, you know, you look at the way the Giants structured that backfield. James Bradbury is signed to a three-year deal, which in reality I think is only a two-year deal when you look at the salary cap numbers and how it's structured. And I could see maybe with down the line, Ballantyne potentially challenging for a starting job. Again, I don't know what's going to happen with Sam Beal. Sam Beal is a guy who, you know, he's got the skill set, but he's got to stay healthy. And right now, that's been his biggest problem. And I think if that continues, I could see Corey Ballantyne overtaking him on the depth chart.
That is Patricia Traina. She's the host of Locked On Giants. You can find her at Patricia_Traina on Twitter. I'm Brian Peacock, host of Locked On 49ers. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. Patricia, thank you so much for the time. It was fun getting to know the New York Giants, one of the 49ers opponents here, the back-to-back New York swing weeks 2 and 3. And I look forward to chatting with you again before that week 3 matchup with the 49ers and Giants. Let's hope it happens.
Amen to that. Fingers crossed. And then until then, Brian, stay safe, and best wishes to all the people out there, the 49er fans who popped on to listen, and the Giant fans, of course.
Be back tomorrow finishing up the NFC East with Landon McCool, host of Locked On Cowboys, right here, Locked On 49ers.